Welcome back to another episode of the Authentic Recruiter Podcast. If you are part of the recruitment industry and you believe that authentic recruiters change lives, then this is the podcast for you. I'm your host, Claire Ackers. I want to say thanks for tuning in. I am so glad you're here. Let's dive in to the episode. Welcome to the Authentic Recruiter Podcast Series 2. Yay! I am sitting down today with Janet McLaughlin, who is Managing Director of Marmion Recruitment. Well, let's dive straight in. Tell us a bit about your story, your background, and what is Marmion Recruitment?
Okay, so I fell into the industry as most people do. I was originally a nurse. I was a paediatric nurse, and I moved to Leeds, having originally moved from Ireland to London. And when my then fiance boyfriend said, "I'm going to move from Ireland to England, will you move up to Leeds?" And I went, "All right then." Arrived in Leeds and thought, "Oh my God, what have I moved to?" And I will fix that comment in a wee while. But I thought, "Oh my goodness, where have I come to?" And I applied to one of the big hospitals here, couldn't get in because the paperwork was taking so long, and I was broke. Nurses are not people who've got a lot of money. I was broke, so I needed a job. So I applied. My husband told me his boss had a friend had an agency, go and see him. So I thought about going to pharmaceuticals because I thought I'd get a car with that. Yeah, because I just passed the driving test. He said, "Why do you want to go into pharmaceuticals?" So I said, "Because I'm sick of not having any money. I want money." He said, "Well, why don't you come make money for me?" Came into it, and like most people, I absolutely hated it. I thought, "I don't want to do this. It was awful."
What were the challenges for you? What did he hate about it?
I'm not a cold salesperson. I'm not that salesperson. I'm good at promoting something I believe in. And I'm good at building good relationships that are, for me and for hopefully the people who are on the other end, authentic relationships that have some meaning and give some value. But I wasn't one that didn't have the confidence or that type of mentality, just pick up the phone and do a cold call. It's never been part of my thing. But if I'm introduced to somebody and I feel that what I can offer would make a difference or would add value, then I'll do it. Not a problem. So I'm not that kind of salesperson. Also, there was no regulation. I'd been in nursing where everything was really strict and you had a proper structure and you had education. There was no education. So I persuaded the guy who owned the company at the time to let us do the rec exams, the foundation course, the cert. And he went along with that. He was really good, actually. He was very innovative for his time. And then we got involved in what was BS 575, or ISO 9001, I think, or two it is now, invests in people. And we really grew the business. And I actually moved from being a recruitment consultant into a manager within about 9 months. And then so management was where I really, that was really my strength. And also it gave me confidence to actually talk to business managers who would use our services, because we were on a level playing field to a degree.
That credibility.
So I became qualified. I was in a more senior position. I could train my trainees to deliver the kind of service that I think everybody deserves. Of course, we were in the early days. I went on to win one of their largest contracts, which I was really proud of. And then I got married, and it was in the days, you know, where when you had children, there was an assumption as a woman that you weren't going to be interested in carrying on your career. And it was really painful, actually, because I've always been a worker. I've always worked. Mm-hmm. And so I left and went into pharmaceuticals for about 6 months, and I hated every minute of it.
Did you get the car?
Prostitution, if I can call it like that. It was just dreadful. I got the car, but I actually had the car from the other job, because so I was responsible for quite a big patch. Which was really bad, but I wanted to buy my own car with the money that I'd earned, so that's what I did. Anyway, and then I went to work for a really big corporate, and they were fantastic. I loved working for them. Tim Watts, who was the chairman of the company, he saw something in me, and he gave me that opportunity to grow and to develop into a businesswoman that I really wanted to become. And also the ethos and the culture of the company suited my way of working. Mm-hmm. And we did really, really well. It was fantastic. Left there after 10 years because the children were going to school, high school. I enjoyed 2 years of being a housewife. It was lovely. And then I built a dental practice, believe it or not. My husband's a dentist, so I built a dental practice from scratch. Did my dental nursing training well, because I felt I've got this thing that if you do a job, if you can get some academia behind you, it gives you that confidence, more confidence and more credibility. So I'm very much into education. Mm-hmm. Anyway, did that and worked with contractors banking for a while with another company, and then made the decision to set up my own recruitment company, which for some people.
But what year was that in? When did you set that up?
So the concept started in 2014. We started doing a bit of RPO work during 2015. A lovely lady, Chris, gave us our first opportunity, but we decided to launch Marmion, the recruitment company, officially in January 2016 from my shed.
I worked in a shed. I had shed for my first 18 months. Loved it. Shed quarters are the way forward. So just pause there a sec, Janet. What was it? I'd love to know if you can recall back in your mind what actually gave you that push to think, you know what, I'm doing this for myself.
Because my children had just gone to university, mm-hmm. and I didn't know of an agency that I felt confident I would send them to. That was the problem.
Ah, interesting.
Apart from one guy that I work with, Jonathan Hurst, I'll give him a plug because he's a really good guy. Jonathan Hurst, who's got a marketing agency. We share very similar values. There was nobody I could think of that I could direct them to. So I thought, you know, if that's because I'm very much engaged with young people in terms of giving them opportunity, giving them that guidance that often they don't get and they can't get access to. Schools don't have the resources available to give that level of support and advice and guidance. So I thought, you know, I could do this. I've got all these years of experience. Why do something completely different when you know what you're doing anyway? Mm-hmm. I can bring in some new people into the industry and train them from scratch and take it from there. So, of course, we launched it in January 2016. June 2016, Brexit happened. I thought, oh, flipping heck, this is it. We're stuffed. But I thought, no, I've been through two major recessions already. I can get through this. So we kept our head down, just kept plugging at it. But of course, you've got all the issues that are around people trusting recruiters. That's the problem. That was one of the hardest things. And people new to the business, in our business, they really struggle because, you know, how did we differentiate ourselves, you know, against all the big boys? You know, and often companies, they just establish relationships and it's hard to actually get them to think of a new player, a new authentic player. So it was a lot of hard work. So we stayed in the shed for a year and 9 months, and I made the decision to move into the city centre. I felt that to be credible, we needed to have a city presence. I felt that for my team to grow, they needed to have the city experience as well. So we moved into an office right by the train station in Leeds. We thought, because we see all of our candidates and we meet our clients, our employers, because we'd be in a more central location, that we'd get more traffic. It didn't work like that. We still ended up going out to have coffee so that it would, which would enable candidates to meet us when it suited them. Mm-hmm. So we moved from there and now we're in Thorpe Park, which is brilliant, actually. In fact, we get more traffic because we've got lots of parking that's available for them. Mm. So it's been a hard graft. And of course, we got through Brexit. But then it was actually quite noticeable in December last year after Brexit had been finally decided. We're out. That's it. That's what we're doing. We're going. I think companies felt more confident. So we had this lovely pipeline. And I thought, yay, we can see this is happening. We've got this lovely pipeline. Everybody's going, yay, congratulating ourselves. Congratulations there. You've survived it. And then COVID hit.
What did we know?
We knew nothing. And I remember writing a post the week before I decided to get everybody to work from home. I wrote a post and said, I've got through a number of different recessions. I've got through Brexit. We'll get through COVID. And of course, a week later, my entire family came down with COVID.
My gosh.
My husband ended up in hospital for 6 weeks. He was in intensive care. We thought we were going to lose him.
Oh my gosh.
I was in hospital. Three of us were in hospital. All four of us have got it, but we survived it. We've come out the other end now. So we gradually did a return to work. So we're just working part-time. But to be fair, if we haven't had furlough scheme in and the grant, I think we would have really struggled. But we've got some really amazing employers who trust us with their requirements. We've even picked up some new ones. And, you know, I'm very hopeful, and hopeful is an important word in our industry, hopeful that we will survive, because we are a very authentic agency. We say we do what we say we'll do, and we stick to a very consistent process that seems to work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there is a lot to unpick there, but I want to just dive in on something you mentioned a moment ago, which is resilience. Oh my gosh, as recruiters, do we need to be resilient? Let's hear about first of all, how your top tips for being resilient, but also specifically how you demonstrate that resilience to the team, you know, that leadership resilience.
Whilst I was at this big corporate part-time that I worked for, I used to fly a lot. And I had 6 months where I was flying up to Edinburgh. Mm-hmm. And I remember one particular landing was very dodgy. And this person could see that I was visibly anxious. I'd got small children. I thought, oh my goodness, will my husband remember to feed them on time? And this guy just sort of grabbed my hand and he said, top tip, if the cabin crew aren't panicking, you know you're going to be all right. So keep your eye on the cabin crew. And if the cabin crew are calm, then you'll be okay. And yes, it resonated with me, because I just thought, if my guy sees that I'm not panicking and that I'm keeping my head down and doing what they're doing, then they know that we're going to be all right. And it's important as a leader not to run for the hills with your panicking. Just keep calm, be real. You know, you have to be, you're constantly doing, you know, a minor SWOT analysis of every situation. But as long as they don't see you panicking, then they will be struggling. And they will learn to be resilient themselves. Because, you know, let's face it, the last couple of years have been awful in industry. You know, there's been a lot, you know, and now we're seeing this where there's a lot of people who are going to lose their jobs. But there are also a lot of opportunities. And that's what we have to look at, is the opportunities. But be aware of the threats. Don't be naive, but just look at the opportunities.
Yeah, I love that. I love that that plane analogy. I think that's really, really solid advice. And you know, I'll let you into a bit of a secret. So totally agree with you, but probably 90% of the CEO and the leadership coaching I've been doing over the past 6 months has been providing that safe space for leaders to go, rah! So that they can provide that solidarity. That game. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really interesting. Hey, it's Claire here. Just jumping on to check whether you have taken my recruitment impact and income scorecard. It's a short quiz, just 30 questions. And at the end, you will get your score and your personalized report. So if you're looking to grow a profitable and purpose-led company, what are you waiting for? Take the scorecard totally free of charge. There is a link in the show notes. Let's get back to the episode. Let's talk about opportunity and hopefulness, because absolutely, we need to be positive, we need to be proactive, we need to take inspired action. Mm-hmm. How's business looking for you, and what measures are you putting in place to build bigger and better?
Look, the industry, you know, you go to your data people and it's clear we've our numbers are down by 50%. That's the reality. The great thing about being a small business in this situation is you can remain, because you already operate on a very lean model anyway, you know, and we've never carried debt. We've always managed our own finance as well, which has been really important. I think the important thing is that, you know, the opportunities are out there because the people are still recruiting, and people always assume it's just the bigger companies that are recruiting. You'll find that the smaller businesses, they've also focused on the opportunities for themselves, and they need to grow. Mm. So this is where you can really come into your own and you can provide a very bespoke service to them. So what we decided was, as soon as furlough allowed us to start to work part-time, we started to get back to work and started to make contact with companies as well. So our business development, we were proactive in business development. We've got someone, a really wonderful person who does the things that we don't particularly enjoy doing, and she picks up the phone and she loves sales, she loves telesales, and she has been doing some business to get our name out there, mm-hmm. just to open some doors. So there are opportunities out there, and if you don't ask, you don't get. That's another thing I have always said to people: what's the worst that can happen? When I was in pediatrics, I was responsible for the lives of small children and babies. The risk there was huge. I could have, if I didn't do my job properly, there was a life and death situation. Mm-hmm. I always look at recruitment, and what I do is I can't kill anyone. I may on the occasion feel a slight temptation. Never. It's against the law, but you know, I can never harm anybody physically. Mm. What I can do is I can do some harm. There is always a risk though, because you know, you, when you're asking someone to give up a job to consider another job, there is a big responsibility for recruiters there. But you know, and we take that very seriously. But in terms of looking forward and what we're doing now, we are taking the opportunity that is afforded to us as a small business to be able to make some of the approaches that the bigger agencies and some of the other agencies aren't doing right now.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It sounds like you have got a very healthy sense of perspective that's seeing you through all this.
You have to, look, I am an eternal optimist. My husband often says, John, how do you jump out of bed in the morning and be awake? And I said, well, that's just how I work. I mean, I sleep very well at night, to be fair. I mean, I get into bed and my head touches the pillow. I can't read because I get to the first word and I'm completely out like a light. But I do look at life in the way that, you know, it's an expression, you're a long time dead. If you decide to work in an industry like ours, there's a lot of effort needed. You need to have the energy to do it. Mm. I still have the energy. I really love what I do. So, you know, I'll continue doing what I do until I can hand over. I mean, my plan is, I have an exit plan, obviously. My plan is to pass it over to that next generation. Mm-hmm. But I'm not quite ready to do that. We've got a way to do that yet. So I'll just carry on doing what I'm doing and bring in, develop these new people.
That sounds like a really worthwhile mission. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You and I have talked about this a little bit previously, but I'd love to know what your thoughts are on how we can change negative perceptions of the recruitment industry. You know, we've talked about authenticity being, we share a lot of values, don't we, Janet, you and I? And I'd love to know what we can do to make sure that the people who do care about what they do, who do think, who do respect recruitment and want to provide a quality service. And, you know, like you say, we are responsible for changing lives. How do we change those negative perceptions?
I mean, it's all about it's the onboarding of people. When you bring people into your organization, whether it's a recruitment agency or whatever business it is, the onboarding mm-hmm. is really critical. And you establish from the very outset a level of transparency in the recruitment stage of bringing someone in. So when I'm recruiting someone, I'll always be as transparent as I can, you know, in terms of, look, it's tough out there. This is not an industry that really you should be in if you aren't prepared for a lot of no's before you get yeses. And I always say we go in this curve that, you know, you teach people, you go up. It's actually the journey upward is one that keeps you motivated because you keep wanting to go up. When you get to the top, of that mountain or whatever it is you describe, you then have a momentary period of time where you look and go, oh, that's lovely view, isn't it great? How great have we done to get up here? But the reality is there's going to be a period where you've got to go back down again. Mm. And navigating the space down can actually be quite treacherous, because you think, oh, it was hard enough getting up, going down. But if you can get down and then and work your way down sensibly, then your motivation to go back up again is much quicker. Now, in recruitment, if you're going to build a good reputation in the business, you have to invest in your people. You have to really invest in them from the very beginning, set the standards. And you don't need a certificate to set the standard. Although if you're new to it, I would say to people, get as much education as you can. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I've got qualifications in so many different things. And actually, I'm doing another course in September, so I continue on with my learning. And what I expect from my own colleagues is that they will continue with their personal development. And I will fund that, providing it actually can be invested back in the business. Mm-hmm. So I think to build a better reputation, you need to be seen to be investing in your business and in your people, and importantly, in yourself. But then you also have to have values that people can experience. So if you want to call yourself an authentic recruiter, don't necessarily follow what everybody else is doing or watch what everybody else is doing. Because just because they're successful at that time doesn't mean to say that's going to happen all the way through their career. If you want to be successful throughout and continue being motivated like I am, you have a standard that you work to, and you focus on those kind of outcomes that you would expect for yourself and other people. But you've got to train people to do that, and they've got to see that you're consistent in that behavior as well.
Yeah, totally agree with you. I think the interesting thing, the thing that absolutely drives me and gets me up in the morning, is just observing the mindset and how that affects performance of recruiters, and that how holding yourself to that standard and being able to pick yourself up when you have had a knock. And we get plenty of opportunities to have a knock in this industry, yeah. Certainly. I think that's what makes difference between a plodder, a recruiter by numbers, and somebody who's actually having that impact.
You know, you have to be commercial. Look, I say to clients, to the employers who pay for our services, you know, clearly we're a commercial business, and we are expected to, you know, as the owner and the managing director of the business, I have a duty to the business to ensure that it's financially competent. I mean, we've got a way to go yet. You know, we're a small business, and we are still not where I'd like us to be, but we are getting there. But if you can be commercial, and you can talk about the commerciality of what you do, because everybody else does it. I mean, lawyers, accountants, they get paid for what they do. The difference is we don't get paid until we deliver, whereas other organizations and a lot of companies don't realize that, you know, for professional recruitment consultants, the amount of work that they have to do to be able to secure the right candidate for them takes a lot of financial and professional expertise to be able to do that. So sometimes you have to educate your employers to say, look, this is what we do. Now, when they see that actually behind just the presentation of a CV, there's a lot of work that goes on, they go, all right, okay. And when they see that consistently happening, that's when they realize you are an authentic recruiter, that you are someone to be trusted, and you are somebody who you know you can turn to when needed. It may not be all the time, but when you do need someone, they'll remember the one who actually came up with the goods and worked for it. Employers expect effort from recruiters. It's not a matter of sending 40 CVs. When I see comments like that, I go, well, there you go. Serves you right. You know, that's why you do. That's why you've got the reputation you've got. It's because sending 40 CVs to me and to anybody else who's at my level, that's not a job. That's not a recruitment consultant's job. That's just, you can get that from the CV bucket.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally agree with you. We're almost out of time, so here's the final question for you. What's a book or a podcast you couldn't live without?
I actually, after you asked me that question, I put it on LinkedIn. There was a book I was given at the age of 15 John Tate gave it to me. It's called Jonathan Livingston Seagull.
Okay.
I had to read it a couple of times because I thought, oh, he's giving me one of these weird 1970s books, you know. What is this that I'm reading? But actually what it was, it's about this seagull and he decides not to follow the flock and he goes off on his own because he wants to fly. He wants to take the risk of learning to fly faster and higher than anybody else. And I'm not into all this sort of like holistic. I'm quite a scientific individual, really. I like facts and stuff like that. But what it struck me that at the age of 15, I was at the time, I thought, you know, you have choices in life. You either follow the crowd or you do what you know is right for you as an individual. And I would say that is probably a book. Well, I know it's the only book I could think of when you asked me that question. Because I read a lot of books. I mean, I've got books. I just ordered a couple more books. I encourage people to read technical books, books that will help you be better at your job. But this book really resonated with me. I thought it was a great book. In fact, I gave it to all the managers that I left when I resigned from the role that I had with a corporate, big corporate. Because I just felt, read it and try and understand it. Don't be afraid to be yourself. That's where you become an authentic individual, because you can, you know, you people remember you rather than just the company. But if they can remember you and the company that you're connected with, even better for us.
Yeah. Work out who you are, what you stand for, and have the courage to live that every day. That is it for today. Thank you so much for being here, and I hope you enjoyed the episode. Please don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe so you never miss an episode. And if we're not already, let's connect on LinkedIn. See you next time.